Imagine you've lived a mobile life, hiking, going into restaurants and stores, never thinking about accessibility. And then one day, something happens and you're confined to a wheelchair or you have to use a walker. Suddenly, you can't access that favorite lookout and that restaurant you love, it doesn't have a ramp and you can't get through the front door. I'm Elizabeth Peterson, and on today's Media Meet, the energy behind a new UP initiative to encourage, educate, and ensure accessibility is something everyone is thinking about and working toward. Welcome to Media Meet. I'm your host, Elizabeth Peterson. Today, we're talking about accessibility across the Upper Peninsula. It's a conversation 30 years after the American Disabilities Act was signed into law. Since that date in 1990, progress has been made. However, for the 40.7 million people living with a disability in the United States, there's much more to be done. Joining us today, Sarah Pierkowski, CEO of SAIL, the Superior Alliance for Independent Living, and Lucy Wilcox, the Accessibility Services Coordinator for SAIL, who is also the certified ADA coordinator. Thank you both for joining me today.
Yeah,
appreciate you being
us.
Here. Now, accessibility, it's something that can so easily be taken for granted for many people until they, you know, are confined to a wheelchair, or maybe they have to wear a boot, or they have their vision impaired by something. They don't realize how important accessibility is.
Right.
But for so many people living in the United States, in the Upper Peninsula, it's something that is a daily concern. And Sarah, at SAIL, mm-hmm. it's something that you're working toward every day, thinking about every day. And I want to talk about some of the programs you all have. But first, talk about what you're seeing, hearing, experiencing as you're doing the work there at SAIL.
Yeah, you know, the UP is a tad bit behind that 30-year mark of the ADA, but we're working on really educating and helping people understand what it looks like. You know, our community is very rural in the UP, and there's not a lot of transportation options, and housing is difficult. There are people out there that want to be able to do things on their own, and there are people out there that really want to help those that do things on their own. So I think that it's a good combination of, you know, people that want to help and people that need the help. And so I think that if we can marry this a little bit more together, then we can have a much more accessible Upper Peninsula. And so that's what we're here to try to help and do.
Absolutely. And Lucy, you know, you have a couple of different titles there. You're the Accessibilities Coordinator, and you're also the ADA Coordinator. So talk a little bit about your role over at SAIL.
Well, Sarah hired me to come on as the Accessibility Services Coordinator, and some of that was based on my history in mental health and working coordinating programs across the 15 counties in the UP, SAILs across the 15 counties in the UP, and so we needed to get started with a program really focused on various ways that a government building or a private business could be inaccessible and start to make some inroads. And that just sounded so gigantic that we said, okay, in 2019, 2020, our primary focus is going to be Marquette County. And then as we're training staff and as we're training each other and educating, we'll branch out.
Sure. So we're talking about the Access for All program specifically today.
Yep.
And tell me about that. How does that work? What are your goals there?
Oh, it's really exciting. I mean, I'm very proud.
Yes,
I think
absolutely.
SAIL is proud that we have a commitment to educate, going to schools, doing Rotary clubs, doing different groups, and just talking about this, but also to develop an ambassadors team composed of temporarily abled people, which I consider myself kind of one. I'm changing.
Yeah.
and then individuals living with disabilities, and have teams together go out into different buildings and places and places, outdoor education, recreation, because it's so important.
And I know there's been a history of concerned citizens that have been looking at that topic, that obviously some people that live with disabilities have known it all their life, or if they've acquired a disability, have learned it quite quickly, as you were saying. So there's been people that have been reviewing those situations around the Upper Peninsula, but we really wanted to take a different stance as getting, you know, staff certified as ADA coordinators that can really go in and write formal reports and help the businesses, help the communities, help the, you know, law enforcement or whoever, municipalities understand that their facilities are just a little too inaccessible for the masses. And so Access for All wanted to research what was going on, try to figure out how the best way to bring in the expertise, and then be able to put that out into the community and then ask people to help us give us information about where there is inaccessibility.
Sure.
So that's where the ambassadors team's coming in.
So a business realizes perhaps they're not ADA compliant. They would call you.
Yep.
And then where does it go from there?
We had a really wonderful learning experience with Omega House in Hancock, which is a program devoted to hospice care. And it really is this wonderful environment. And their front doors weren't accessible. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of the winter when we went, you couldn't get in the front door without assistance. So you could open a door and somebody could be pushed in their wheelchair into the two doors. Mm-hmm. So they really knew that. Their board of directors said, call SALE, and we want to have a review so that we know what to budget.
Sure.
So they were very proactive, and we're finding that there are people who are saying, okay, we know this has to be different. And so that was just a beautiful first experience to go out and like be an official reviewer. And we can generate a useful report with photographs, with measurements, with ideas, list levels of intensity, you know, levels of what's going to need to be reviewed.
So you're giving them basically ideas of how to become compliant, and then it's on them to fund it, to figure out how to make it happen.
Right. And so one of the difficulties that people maybe shy away from is the fear that if they try to renovate or move things into more accessibility, that they're going to, or that they're going to be sued and be forced to doing that. We're trying to alleviate that fear so that they can come in and actually get an education of it, a review, a report. How do you plan it out to do that? You know, obviously private businesses or places that are for profit can't just go out and write a grant to change their whole front building or their bathroom or the way their menus are presented. So if they know about it though, they might be able to chip away and make it a little more accessible each time they want to make an upgrade to their facility or to their program.
Sure.
So it's just an educational piece of come to us and talk about it. We'd much rather that than somebody call our agency, which has happened quite a bit. Sometimes people in the community call SALE and say, this place is not accessible. You guys call and get it right. And we say, well, it's a civil rights law. If you want to make a suit, you can. But we'd be happy to talk to the business and make it better before they get to that point.
So let's talk about the law a little bit and how it does work. Because like you said, it's a civil rights law.
Right.
So the American with Disabilities Act, and there are some misconceptions, and that's something that you're working to fix as well. So there's that misconception that you have a private business. It doesn't matter, you don't have to be ADA compliant. That is not true.
No. there was this conception that if you were built before 1991, when it went into effect, that if you weren't compliant, then you were fine. Mm-hmm. You were grandfathered in. And in the UP, we really like our grandfathers, so we like to talk about grandfathering in, and it makes it sound very official to us. Mm-hmm. And it's not, and that really is the impetus. It was that way across the country for the amendment to the ADA that took place in 2010.
Right.
where they said, if you're an existing facility, you must show that you've done due diligence now, recently, 2010, and made a plan to improve in these four areas. And then if you absolutely can't do that, then there's the Michigan Barriers Commission, and you go to them and you apply for an exception.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So, and new construction, obviously, they need to be compliant.
They must be compliant.
So, what if they don't? Who's monitoring this? How does that?
Well, that's a good question, because lots of people, it's not a problem until somebody actually comes in and says, I can't get in and I want to go in that direction. And maybe Lucy can kind of explain how somebody could go in that direction. But in our opinion is you try to avoid that. If there's somebody that can come in and say, hey, an ambassador team came in and reviewed and said there's some issues here and you might want to consider changing that, that's a lot better to try to say, I've got a plan. Sure. I know we're going to move it in this direction and we can show you what we're going to try to do versus saying, oh, nope, that's not our problem anymore. So I don't know if you can explain how someone would go through it if they wanted to challenge a place that was not ADA compliant.
If you are going to file a complaint, depending on what agency the complaint is with, because the ADA doesn't apply, the Department of Transportation has their own rules, but for Title II, government entities, and Title III, private facilities who are doing business with the public, mm-hmm. serving the public, those two folks can go to the Department of Justice and file a complaint. And then the Department of Justice has the choice to pick up an individual complaint. They rarely do, but if you get enough people with the same complaint against an agency, against a group of businesses all under one title, there have been some big DOJ complaints and cases that have gone sure. to court where things have dramatically changed in sure. terms of medical care.
And like you said, that doesn't happen very often. So do you find when an area of concern is brought to a business owner's attention or an organization's attention that they're open to it? You know, perhaps it was not an intentional decision, but more a miseducation, and they want to fix it or find a solution?
Well, yes. And there we have a issue that was resolved. I'm supposed to go and review it sometime this week or next week with our local ER that didn't provide good counter space at a height where someone who's a wheelchair user could sit and fill out their registration forms. Sure. So we've been working with the building facility manager and going back and forth, and feel that we were able to accomplish what mm-hmm. needed to happen.
So was that a case where an individual went there and realized that it wasn't accessible and they called you and then you were able to mediate, or?
Yes. The simple answer
is yes.
I think that there's really not a regulation facility. It's more if somebody has a complaint and it kind of moves up. People aren't out trying to, that's really where our ambassadors team can come into play
sure.
or volunteers in the community. If you see an environment that you would like to get into and you can't because of the accessibility concerns, we could try to help work with them, educate them, talk about the program, see if they're interested, and if that person individually feels like they're not getting the responses they need, really the citizens are the regulators.
Right.
They, and then stepping out and saying, okay, let's figure out how to file a suit. But our goal, and I think most people, they just want the solution. You know, and it's not about, you know, you're bad and I'm good and you need to change for me. It's not that. It's about, this makes sense that we all want to be able to be in the same place that our family members are, that a playground where we can all play together.
Sure. So let's talk about the four areas that you look at. There's parking, the entrance, navigation, and restrooms. So what are, your ambassador team goes in, what are they looking for in those areas?
Well, you have very specific measurements, and people we like to have thought that if it just is wide enough, one direction, 40 inches or 44 inches, and handrails, that means you're compliant, and it's not that simple, because that would require that somebody was taking that person and toileting them.
Sure.
And so the idea of independent wheelchair users or people who are walking with canes, that they could manage themselves in a toilet room that was the right size to be able to rotate a chair, to be able to turn carefully, and the right height.
Right.
Somehow we've trended toward having low toilets. Mm-hmm. Well, try and get off a low toilet. Anything under 17 inches is really pretty darn challenging. And
I think that's exactly like what the ADA is putting out there, are some of those regulated heights. You know, regulated heights for countertops, where you do the reach, how far up a towel rack should be, how you can get your knees underneath a wash area for washing your hands, opening the door, the actual pressure of how to open a door, that's a regulation piece. There's a certain amount of pressure for it to be accessible. The type of handle. So you're talking about just entrance. There's a lot of different pieces that they're looking at with the heights, the going in, the, you know, those types of very specific points that they're looking at. The navigation, once you're inside, you know, typically I think of restaurants like to pack in their tables, and it's really difficult to get in between tables and chairs when they're pulled out and people are sitting at them. So if there's not enough distance between tables in the back, then you're not able to wheel through. Or with crutches, or if you have a visual impairment. One thing that people struggle with sometimes is realizing with canes, they're down on the ground. So if a water fountain is sticking out in the middle of the wall, they're not going to feel that until they hit it, or they'll hit it on their hip, or a sign is coming up and they're not, you know. So it's just these little things that only real people that are using or that have disabilities are sensing and picking up. So those are the little extra things that they're looking for.
Sure. Yeah. And I just want to do a quick reminder for those who may have just joined us or for those listening on Public Radio 90. We're here talking with Sarah Pierakoski, Executive Director of SAIL, and Lucy Wilcox, the Accessibility Services Coordinator of SAIL. Thank you both again for joining us. You know, as I've been talking with you guys a few times now, you've talked about the momentum that you feel like is happening right now. You've called it the tipping point. Why do you think there is this renewed energy toward accessibility?
Most people want to do good and may not know how to.
Sure.
And so a lot of the ADA is not about compliance. It's about, this is how a friend of yours or your mother or anybody could get in and have dinner with you. You can't have two snow steps up into the restaurant. That's going to block company. So it's about that, and it's also about that our society is aging. And guess what? We're living longer, we're aging, we're used to being able to do what we want to do, and you know what? I want to keep doing it.
Sure.
So if I'm now suddenly in a wheelchair, I still want to be eating at the restaurant where my family's been eating for generations.
Sure.
So it really is about people wanting to do good. It really is about people needing more accessibility because they're more. And it's also the one point that I want to mention is that those are the four official priorities. And one of our ambassador team, Alan Beauchamp, who's a wheelchair user, he and I were going over that list one of the first times I met him, and he said, yes, those four things you want to be able to do, but you want to be able to do them without stigma.
Sure.
You know, yeah. So it's not like, oh, you're special and we're gonna make this for you and there's a big deal about it, but it's just done as a matter of course.
Yeah.
And so, you know, wanting to go and use the restroom and you can't.
Right. Sure.
And there's, you know, the movement, the independent living movement came from the 60s during the civil rights movement. Obviously, it was 30 years beyond that where the ADA finally was put into play. Now we're 30 years more beyond that where people are still not quite sure how or why, and I'm going to say this facetiously, why people with disabilities really want to live in the community. The deinstitutionalization of people with disabilities happened in the 60s, and we are getting more and more to that point where I think that everybody realizes how important it is to be within your community in order to have a most fun and life, like productive life.
Sure.
So accessibility is such a big piece of that, and if we don't all believe in good, true accessibility, I don't think we're really engaging everybody that we could into community life. And so I think that's where that tipping point our society is wanting to engage everybody. They do really want to do good, but they're still kind of stuck in my, you know, that problem with that it's too difficult to change,
sure.
You know,
sure.
The environment. So.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the neat things that you all are doing that I think is neat because of where we live and because it is the Upper Peninsula and so much of what we do is outside is the work that you've done with the DNR, the work that you're continuing to, you know, being asked to do with the DNR so that parks, trails, overlooks, they are accessible. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm part of the DNR Accessibility Advisory Council with the state of Michigan that we work alongside of Stacey Howie in the Upper Peninsula. But I also, you know, you can see that the DNR has actually taken a really strong stance on accessibility from really awesome advocates around the state. And they're really focusing on renovation of parks so that everybody can enjoy the outdoors. They really have a great sense that everybody deserves that right to enjoy the outdoors. They've been doing a lot of stuff around in their parks, and they've purposely put in their applications for dollars that it's important for people to have an accessibility component to their renovations. So I know Lucy's been working with a couple facilities and places reviewing their plans. Mm-hmm. Those places get more points when they make it more accessible.
Sure.
So she can maybe talk a little bit about.
Oh, and it's really wonderful, the DNR. In their grant application, you must prove, you must say, yes, you did have an ADA coordinator review this, or no, you didn't. And the no loses points. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to lose points on accessibility. It's not a good thing. So that's wonderful that mm-hmm. they really gave some teeth to the money.
Right.
And that it's really fun, you know. But for instance, Carol Fulcher just wrote me, and the two grants that they were working on for the Iron Ore Heritage mm-hmm. Trail, both of which were about accessibility, better lighting on part of the trail, and then a restroom and better parking lot, neither got funded mm-hmm. this time. So it's not a shoo-in that, you know, because you're really supporting and advocating for accessibility, there are other criteria. But that is a big piece, and we're really happy about that. And that's part of why Sarah said, okay, we need to do this accessibility, this access for all, because we really want people to be healthier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the...
And have access anywhere they choose to go.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we're talking about this, there's so many components, and it's really a really big picture. And I'm sure for all of you, it can be very overwhelming. So where do you look to find your inspiration and to know, you know, to find those little, those areas that you can make an impact, you can make a difference? How do you manage that scope?
We really... In my perspective, I look at the people that we serve. We're really trying to find individuals that want to come in and help out, educate. So I think inspiration does come from the people that I'm around all the time. I have a, I don't know if it's a little spider sense of going into a location and looking around and going, eh, it's not really accessible for the friends and family and neighbors and people that I work with. And so I think that once you get that in your blood, you can spread that knowledge to a lot more people. So my inspiration just comes from knowing that, hey, I couldn't bring my friend into this location and maybe I could talk to the manager about that.
Sure.
And I absolutely believe that personal stories are key. You know, the civil rights movement made progress when Afro-Americans were dancing with white girls and there were Hispanics at a party in high school because the schools had integrated. You know, they got to know each other socially. And so individuals with disability, we're looking for folks to advocate with us. You know, nothing for us without us was the battle cry in the 60s, and it still needs to be. And so the ambassador team is meant to be balanced with individuals who are temporarily able and individuals who are not. And depending on what we're reviewing, so we reviewed Thomas's Rock in Big Bay.
Sure.
And it was wonderful. We had an NMU student with us, and he's a power wheelchair user, and his father provides personal assistance to him, and it wasn't snowing. Yes. And so and it was so exciting because we found out, yes, you can get all the way around, and he got to see that view where you see the Houghton, the Copper Peninsula. Just, it was a peak experience.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. So we just only have about 30 seconds left. Somebody's watching the program. They know they have a business that they need some information. They need some help, some guidance. They just call your office?
Yep, you can call us at 228-5744. We are on Facebook. You can email through our website at upsale.org. And there's any way you can talk to any one of our staff and we'll get you in touch with Lucy or myself. And we just really do want to educate and help the community.
Sure. Yeah. Any last bit for you?
Sarah's a good follow, you know.
Yeah. Well, I thank you both for joining us, Sarah. Yes,
thank you.
Lucy, you're both doing a wonderful job educating, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you for your help in educating.
Absolutely. And for those of you watching and those listening on Public Radio 90, thank you. Until next time, I'm Elizabeth Peterson for WNMU's Media Meet. Have a great week.
The preceding program was produced by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television, in studios located in Elizabeth and Edgar Hardin Hall.